welcome to Rough Fellow Podcast, where we teach you all the skills that I believe every man should know. So today we're talking whiskey, and this is going to be something that I'm going to spend a couple different episodes on. I'm not just going to do one. The reason why is because there's just so much information, right? You're gonna go to the end of this and know so much more than you did before. But there's just such a mass amount of information to talk about today. So I want to get started kind of right away and keep going, and it's going to be a long one, but like I said, I want to break it up two parts. So the way I want to go about this, we're going to get a really good introduction for you into whiskey. So even if you are brand new to this, right, like you have no idea about anything whiskey, you don't understand it, you've never learned about it beyond the word whiskey, you have no clue, right? Maybe you know Jack Daniels, but that's it. We're going to change that. We're going to go with a really good introduction today. We're going to talk about some really unique things with whiskey, a lot of like things that you probably would never know, even if you were kind of studying it. And then also the whole point of this, we're just going to focus on making you more knowledgeable about this and get you going with it, right? Get you started so that if it's something you're interested in and want to pick up and want to try different stuff with, great. This will help you considerably with that. The way that I'm going to start this, I'm going to make sure everybody is on the same page from this point on, right? I want to make sure that we include as many people as possible. And that means going over information that may be kind of talking down to you a little bit. And I don't mean to, right? It's just that there's going to be people that don't quite understand some simple things. And it's just because they've never been introduced or never been told this, which is no problem at all, right? I just want to make sure that we include them in this and then we can kind of go from there. And then eventually we're going to pick up where your knowledge leaves off and give you some more insight as well. So if you're one of those people that already know a little bit about it, this very first part may be kind of, you know, boring for you a little bit, but it's important information nonetheless, and it will honestly help reinforce for things that you may have learned a while ago but may have forgotten. So starting off, right, I want to mention that whiskey is a term that encompasses a broad spectrum of products, right, of things. So if you're going to a liquor store and you get, let's say you get like bourbon, for example, or scotch, that is whiskey, right? A lot of people think that those are different types of alcohol, particularly bourbon. I've actually kind of run into a lot of people who thought that, like, oh, I thought bourbon was kind of its own deal, like its own alcohol. And yes, bourbon is significantly different than scotch, right? But it's still a whiskey, and it falls within the spectrum of whiskey. So just know that that is just a term that means whiskey, but it's a specific type of whiskey, okay? So from there, starting out here, whiskey is made typically from four different grains. Now, there are absolutely exceptions to this rule. There are some really cool craft distilleries and really main distilleries as well, like major ones, that are doing kind of some different things, and that's awesome. But by and large, you're going to find whiskey made from one or more of these four different grains, okay? So that would be barley, wheat, rye, and corn. So again, it can be made from one or it can be made from multiple of those. And if it is, that leads us into something called a mash bill. The mash bill is essentially, well, it is, right? It's just the percentages of each type of grain. And end of thing, right? That's all the mash bill is. So it's the percentages of each type of grain in your whiskey. So for example, you could have 70% corn, 10% barley, 20% rye, right? Like that would be your mash bill then. It wouldn't just be, oh, this is a whiskey. This is a corn, dominantly corn whiskey. So it's made entirely from corn. No, that's not true. There are whiskeys that do that. But for the mash bill that we're talking about here, it can be broken up into different types of grains. And those percentages are going to be what make up the mash bill. Sometimes they list it on the bottle. Sometimes they don't. It just depends on it. But if you get a bottle that says, oh, this is what the mash bill is, and it's giving you the different percentages of each type, that's what that means. So for bourbon, however, so now we're kind of getting into labeling a little bit, and just briefly, because I'm going to actually spend a considerable amount of time talking about labels on whiskey, which will help you significantly when you're going to pick a whiskey. But for now, I just want to mention that if, let's say that you have a whiskey and you're in the liquor store and you see something that says bourbon, right? Bourbon, what that means is it met certain qualifications to be called bourbon, but its mash bill is going to be dominantly corn. It's not going to be all corn. It doesn't have to be all corn, right? It just has to be at least 51% corn. So corn has to be the primary grain in a bourbon, okay? The same way that a rye whiskey, it has to have the dominant grain be rye. So that means that 51% of the grain in that whiskey has to be rye. Wheat whiskey, 51% wheat, right? You can see how we can continue down this road. But that's all it means. It's just that's the primary grain is whatever that whiskey type is. So if it's rye, dominant grain is rye. Okay. So before we kind of get into, like I said, the labels and things like that I want to talk about, I want to talk briefly about the government rules about labels. And it seems like kind of a nerdy topic and something you wouldn't really quite need to know. But like I said, with bourbon, there, in order for it to be called bourbon, it has to meet certain criteria. So in that case, we kind of have to know about it so we can have a better understanding of what exactly bourbon is. So different governments are going to have laws about what whiskey can be called, right? America has some of the strictest rules on this, not on what you can make necessarily, but on what it can be called, which we'll get into later. But for now, let's just start with bourbon since we've kind of already been talking about it for a fair amount of time. Bourbon, like I said, it has to be primarily corn, right? So its most dominant grain has to be corn, which means it has to be at least 51% corn. Okay. That's kind of like rule one. The next thing, it has to be aged, not finished, which we're going to talk about those two different terms in just a second here, but aged in new oak barrels. So they can't use used barrels to age their whiskey. That is a requirement by law for bourbon. And it also has to be made in America. So you cannot have a bourbon that is made in Scotland, for example. Now, for scotch, right, kind of vice versa on this, in order for a whiskey to be called scotch, it has to be made in Scotland. Same way that bourbon has to be made in America, scotch has to be made in Scotland. And that's really one of the only main rules with scotch. There may be little things like weird kind of things that you have to do in that, but that's kind of the more dominant one, right? So if you see something that says scotch on it, it had to have been made in Scotland. That's it. But the cool thing about scotch as well, which is why I feel like scotch has a lot more variety in their taste profiles, because it can be aged in used oak barrels as well as new, right? It can absolutely use new, but it can be also aged in used oak barrels, used barrels, right? So that's really cool because they can do really interesting things and they're not limited by this new oak barrel law or regulation that's causing them to limit the spectrum of taste, which is why, in my opinion, now this is totally my opinion, you could feel differently about this, and I am wrong, I'll tell you that right now, that there's a much narrower field of taste when it comes to bourbon. That part I'm not wrong about, but what I'm wrong about is that all bourbon tastes the same. That's totally untrue, right? Bourbon can vary wildly. And there are cool places making bourbons that are doing just awesome things. Angel's Envy is amazing bourbon, right? It tastes so good. It's so different than a lot of stuff that I've had before. In the kind of bourbon field, you still get some of those classic bourbon notes that you would normally get. Pretty much that's because of things like it has to be primarily corn and it has to be aged in new oak barrels. So you're going to get some of those same characteristics, but they are doing some different things, which causes it to change the flavor a little bit. Now, the nice thing that bourbon can do, well, both any whiskey, but bourbon has this freedom as well, is to finish. Remember, I was talking about the difference between aged and finishing. Aged is just like it's getting older in this barrel, right? But when they finish the whiskey, they can actually put it in different things. So they can finish a bourbon in like a wine cask, right? And that will cause it to change the flavor profile totally. Now you'll still get, like I said, some of those classic bourbon notes, but you're going to get a little bit of a difference because now you can finish it. That's really the thing that bourbon has, to be able to kind of have some creativity there, where it doesn't have to taste all the same, because they do have a little bit of freedom when it comes to finishing whiskey, which is going to change flavor. Okay. So different countries now, we'll kind of move on to this. We got a pretty good understanding of that, I think. So different countries that produce whiskey. We talked a lot so far about bourbon and scotch, right? So we know bourbon has to be made in America. Scotch has to be made in Scotland. So we know about America and Scotland so far, right? But a big player that we didn't mention so far is Ireland. Right? Like Irish whiskey, that's something that a lot of people know about. Jameson, right? How massive is that name? So you know a lot about Irish whiskey, probably, right? You may not, you may be brand new. And if you are, I'm not trying to call you out or anything, but Ireland, yeah, you're going to have things like Jameson. You've probably at least heard the name, even if you don't quite know what whiskey is. And then Japanese whiskey too. Japanese whiskey is really kind of, in my opinion, underrated. It's a fantastic whiskey, right? They produce some really good stuff. Hibiki Harmony is just a great whiskey. So Japanese whiskey is really a big player in this, but they're just kind of not as well known, unless you're in that kind of industry or already know a fair amount about whiskey. You're not really going to know that. So yeah, there's a lot of different countries that will be very good for creating whiskey, and a lot of different types of whiskey rather that you should try from different countries, because they're going to vary in their tastes because they're made different ways, or they're, you know, like I said, there's different government laws or regulations that are going to cause them to be made certain things and have more of a characteristic. But again, the flavor spectrum in a lot of these places are so large that even scotch, right? You can have two different scotches and they taste totally different because they don't have as many restrictions. So you can have really good scotch. So beyond just the kind of different countries as well, we should probably break this down even more. There are actually sub-regions of countries, like I just talked about with scotch in Scotland. It can have two totally different tastes, right? And a lot of times it's because distilleries are planted or kind of put into, located in, rather, is a better word, located in different regions within Scotland. So Scotland is the country, right? But there's different regions within it, and those distilleries in those specific regions are creating whiskey in different ways. So a big example of this would be like smoky whiskey. If you ever had smoky whiskey, a lot of people associate scotch with that, and more of like a butterscotch caramel flavor, right? Those are two very different flavors, and they both are scotch. So they both, there's two different whiskeys, Laphroaig and Monkey Shoulder, right? Those are both scotches, but Laphroaig is really smoky and aggressive, and Monkey Shoulder is really just easy to drink, right? Like it's almost scary easy to drink. So those are two very different flavor profiles, but they're both scotch, and they're just located in different kind of sub-regions within Scotland that are doing different things. And don't think that just because something is located in a specific region, like we're going to talk about here in a second, like sub-region, that it has to have that specific characteristic. It's just it's a good kind of rule of thumb, maybe, when you're looking in and initially getting into it, but they're going to wildly differ. Even within the same regions, they can have some really big differences. And I'll kind of get into some examples in each of these sub-regions of Scotland to help you understand a little bit, but let's just talk about them for right now. So Islay is a big one. Highland and Lowland, those are two big ones as well. Island is just a kind of sub-region that you can say. Speyside, although Speyside is technically located within Highland, but it is kind of its own unique thing. And we'll talk about an example of that in a minute here too. And then Campbelltown. So those are kind of the six main ones, right? The Islay, Highland, Lowland, Island, Speyside, and Campbelltown. Those are the six, in my opinion, really different and unique kind of sub-regions within Scotland when it comes to distilleries and what they make. So some examples of this, just to kind of help and kind of ingratiate this into you a little bit. Examples of this. So Islay, we already talked about Laphroaig, right? Laphroaig is a major example in Islay. Islay is really well known for smoky whiskey, and they get that because they use peat. It's peat, like peat moss or peat bog. So what it is they cut out these bricks. They come out in bricks in the ground, and they use them as firewood, right? And what they do is during the process of creating the whiskey, which we're not going to get into because I feel like it's a little too nerdy, right? We don't need to really dive that deep into it yet. But when in the process of making it, they have to malt the barley. Okay, so Scotch, one of the things about Scotch is that it is, if it's a single malt whiskey, like single malt Scotch or something, the malt in that refers to all barley. So Scotch, all barley is a typical thing. So it's 100% barley, right? They're creating it using this barley grain. And they malt it, and pretty much it's just the process of tricking it to grow and then killing it so that way it can, you know, produce sugars and eat the sugars and ferment, right? That's as literally as far as we're going to go into that. But Islay is really well known for using peat for that to stop that process so that it can eat the sugars and ferment. And what happens is the smoke they get from burning those peat logs kind of ingrain in this, almost embed in these grains, right? And they kind of persist with that flavor even throughout the entire process, including into bottling, which is why you get that smoky flavor. It comes from that peat. Kind of an interesting thing there. But Islay is really well known for this. So some examples of whiskey for that would be like Laphroaig, Ardbeg, Lagavulin. Those are really, really big ones. Lagavulin is probably the most expensive out of that. So just keep that in mind. I would start off with, if you're just interested in that flavor, Laphroaig or Ardbeg. Both are probably pretty comparable in price, especially if you get the 10 years of each. And then Highland. So I think things like Macallan. Macallan's really well known. You may have heard of it just in TV or movies or something like that. Macallan's a pretty popular one. They have a great marketing, so you probably have heard of them. They're like one of the most well-known whiskeys. And then Highland Park and Deanston. For Speyside, you can do like a Glenfiddich or a Longmorn. Longmorn, if you can get your hands on it. Oh my gosh, man. Like, I understand some of you are probably new, so you won't quite appreciate it. But it is a fantastic whiskey for those of you who are into this world already and just kind of want to try something new. Longmorn, man. Longmorn 16. You can't go wrong. So Macallan. Macallan, one of the things about Macallan, I know we already talked about it, it is a Highland. Well, it's labeled as a Highland, but Macallan is actually located in Speyside. And like I said, Macallan is masters at marketing, right? That's why they're so well known. So what they did was they put themselves as a Highland whiskey. And the reason why is because more people know what Highland is than they know what Speyside is. So it just helps their consumers know, oh, this is a Highland whiskey. I kind of know what that is, right? That's all it really is. But they are actually technically located in Speyside, so you could qualify them as that. But for the purposes of today, because they are listed on their bottle as Highland, we're going to put them in Highland. Okay. But just know that that's kind of a neat thing with them. Lowland, you can do whiskeys like Port Dundas or Ailsa Bay. Ailsa Bay, I'm kind of, that is the correct pronunciation, I believe, but it is spelled like A-I-L-S-A, and that's not how, maybe if you're looking in the store, you're going to be trying to find Ailsa, like I'm saying it, but that is how it's spelled. So if you're looking for that whiskey, just kind of look for that wording. And then your island whiskeys. So Talisker, right? You may have heard of that one. That's pretty big. Talisker is a phenomenal whiskey. It's an island whiskey. So is Arran whiskey, Tobermory. Those are other good examples of that. And then Campbelltown. So think like Springbake or Kilcarran. Those are kind of the main ones there. So that is, those are some really good examples. And I gave you those just so to kind of help you understand, number one, that we reinforce the sub-regions of Scotland so you may remember them a little bit better, but also so that if you're interested in Scotch, just kind of right off the bat, you can go and get maybe some whiskeys from some different subregions, and then you can kind of compare and see about the differences that I'm talking about. So if that's something you're interested in doing, I recommend doing that. And even if you don't want to buy like a full bottle, which I absolutely understand, sometimes sometimes it can get pricey, right? Just do little bottles, even kind of create your own little flight of whiskey, and then you can see that experience there. A lot of times bars will do this too, some bars. One thing here, like I talked about with Scotch, it can be smoky, right? Like, but that is a specific subregion. However, I wanted to go over this. Actually, I just had a recent encounter with a friend who said he didn't like Scotch because it was like a campfire in his mouth, right? So what he was saying was it's a smoky whiskey. Well, the whole thing was he didn't like Scotch because of it. But that's the thing. Those subregions, like I was talking about, and those different whiskeys that I gave examples of, they're going to have wildly different tastes. It's not just going to be a smoky whiskey. So keep that in mind, too. If someone says they don't like Scotch because of this specific taste, then maybe try to introduce them to something different. Or if you don't like it because you think it's a specific taste, try another type of whiskey from a different subregion. So try like a Glenfiddich. Compare Glenfiddich to a Islay whiskey, and you're going to see major differences, right? So even though you may not like the smoky, aggressive whiskey right now, you could later on, but you could also just not have that kind of palate right now. So you want to try something in a different part of Scotland and find the Scotch that works for you, okay? So we talked about the Scottish kind of Scotland subregions, right? But America, it's not that it has like so much of a subregion. I guess so, right? It's Tennessee we're going to be talking about next. So that is technically like a subregion of America. It's a state in America. But Tennessee, the reason I wanted to go over this, Tennessee recently passed a law that says in order for whiskey to be called a Tennessee whiskey, it must use a charcoal mellow process. So the reason why I put this in here, it's not because like, oh, this is a cool thing, although it is, but Jack Daniel's uses this, and that's kind of the one whiskey that everyone seems to know. So I wanted to go over it and explain how different countries can have different internal laws that could qualify whiskeys further. So Jack Daniel's is interesting because Jack Daniel's is technically a bourbon. It meets all of the qualifications of bourbon. However, it labels itself as a Tennessee whiskey. And the reason why is because of this charcoal mellow process. So what they do is they create charcoal, right? So they just burn a bunch of wood. They have these huge vats where they put a bunch of charcoal in there, and then they filter their whiskey through it. So that's the charcoal mellowing process. And it creates kind of an interesting flavor there. But in Tennessee, that's what they did. They passed a law that says in order for you to be called Tennessee whiskey, it has to use that process. Jack Daniel's isn't the only one that does that. I believe Dickel whiskey uses it too. It's kind of a really budget bourbon, at least where I am. So if you're interested in trying that, I would just get one of those and see kind of like compare the differences between that. But that's really all I'm going to talk about with America's subregions, because most of the time when you think of America whiskey, it's bourbon, right? But there is kind of weird things, like corn whiskey and things like that, which if you want to research a little further, you can go into that. So beyond what I was kind of talking about here, craft and even well-known distilleries are always trying new things. Okay, so like we talked a lot about laws and stuff like that. Sometimes they don't want to be classified as a bourbon because they don't want to have that kind of narrow spectrum of flavor because of those laws that are in place, right? Because of the kind of restrictions that they have. So they actually prefer maybe not to be called a bourbon. They want to be something different. They want to be like a corn whiskey, like I said, where you're pretty much entirely corn. Or just label yourself as a whiskey. I think Wyoming whiskey does this, where they don't adhere to the bourbon principles, so they can't be called bourbon, but they're just a Wyoming whiskey. Michter's does the same thing. Michter's American whiskey. Both are phenomenal. So don't think that like, oh, I want an American whiskey, or this distillery is located in America and it's not bourbon, so it's garbage. No, that is not true at all. It's just that if you're going to have a bourbon, knowing that it has to meet those certain standards is going to give you an insight into the taste. But even if it's made in America and it doesn't qualify as bourbon, don't just dismiss it, because it could really surprise you. So they're always trying new things, right? And that's awesome. So I encourage you, if you guys have a craft distillery by you, go try some of their other stuff, right? If you're already pretty familiar with bourbon and just want to get into something else, try some of their craft stuff. See how you like it. See what the differences are. Okay, so this is, I'm super excited about this next part because this is the true point. We kind of nerded out a little bit in the first part of this, but now we're getting into the really cool stuff and the actual things that are going to help you significantly when getting started into whiskey. And that is reading the labels, right? Just being able to understand what they're saying when they say things on these labels, on these whiskey labels. If you walk into a liquor store now, especially like a large one, right? Like a Total Wine or something like that, it's massive aisles with just all a bunch of different kinds of whiskeys, and they're all saying different things and you don't understand it. So you're just picking the ones that look the best or have the best bottle or like, oh, that's a cool name. I'm going to try that, right? But reading and understanding these whiskey labels is going to help you considerably in understanding what's inside of it. It's not going to give you a perfect, you know, this is the taste that you're going to receive from this whiskey, but it will give you really good insight so that you have more of an educated guess in what it's going to taste like just from looking at the bottle. But we'll go into this here. So again, right, I'm including everyone in this, so I want to make sure that people understand the differences. So when I say proof, some of you are like, oh, yeah, I know what that is. And that's great. But there may be people that don't. So that's why I want to mention everything, right? So proof, we're going to start there. What if something is labeled on a whiskey as, let's say, for example, 80 proof, that means it's 40% alcohol. Or if something on the whiskey label is 100 proof, that's 50% alcohol. What you do with proof is divide it by two, and that's the amount or the percentage of alcohol in that whiskey. Okay. And a cool little interesting tidbit here. In order, whiskey's lowest alcohol percentage is 40% in order to be really classified as a whiskey. So 40% is... it is like the lowest point that you're going to get. It's also the one that a lot will use. And the reason why is because of mass distribution and mass quantity. They want to get the most out of their whiskey. So they're going to proof it down a little bit at 40% for you. And it can taste great, right? It doesn't have to be a super high proof to taste wonderful. There's 40% whiskeys out there that are absolutely phenomenal, but just know that that's kind of what they're doing, and why you'll see a lot of them at 40% is just because they can sell more of their whiskey at that percentage. That's really it. So, and the next kind of big one here, a lot of people know this again, just from TV or movies, right? Or it's like the main one that people think about when they think of high class quality, you know, this is the best thing ever, single malt. Now, I will tell you that just because something says single malt doesn't necessarily mean it's phenomenal. And the reason why I'm going to I'll dissect this word, these words a little bit and help you understand that point. Single malt. Single is not a descriptor of malt. A lot of people think it is, and it's natural to think that way because we are, well, I am an American, right? You may not be if you're listening to this, but this is just how I read in normal English, right? I'm thinking that single refers to malt, like it's a descriptor of malt, but it's not. It's actually two different words talking about two different things. Single in that statement refers to the fact that it was made with one distillery. Okay, it was made in one distillery. So think about like Jack Daniels. Jack Daniels can be called single. They do all of their stuff at Jack Daniels Distillery. Okay, so Jack Daniels, that whatever whiskey, their original whiskey is a single, right? Malt refers to all barley. So that's why a lot of times you see single malt scotch, because scotch a lot of times uses all barley, right? So single refers to one distillery and malt refers to 100% barley as their grain, okay? Single grain, if you see that terminology, single still refers to that one distillery. Grain, however, now refers to multiple grains make up that whiskey. So Jack Daniels, again, technically a single grain whiskey because they came from one distillery and they use multiple grains to create their whiskey. Okay. Blended malt. So blended here is the word that changed for us, or single rather is the word that changed to blended. Blended, what that means is it came from now multiple distilleries. So it can't be called single anymore since they used other distilleries. They used, you know, two or more distilleries. So it's now a blended malt. Malt still refers to that 100% barley though. Blended grain, you'll see these. I'm just going to kind of knock these out right now just so you understand fully. Blended, again, refers to multiple distilleries being used to create this whiskey. It's a blended whiskey. Grain refers to multiple grains still, okay? And then last one here, blended scotch. Blended scotch, you already understand what blended is. You already understand what scotch is. If something says blended scotch, it's a combination of blended malt and blended grain. That's what you need to know about that, okay? So for your, let's go, okay, enough of that, right? Those are kind of just the main ones, and they were very similar to each other. But it's just important to know that those are two different words meaning two different things and knowing what those words really mean. Now we'll get into bourbon. So the interesting thing about bourbon, straight bourbon, what that means, if you see the word straight in front of bourbon, it means it's at least 4 years old. Okay. So straight bourbon, a bourbon cannot be qualified as straight unless it's at least 4 years old. Okay. Bottled in bond. This is an interesting terminology. It's an interesting terminology, but it's also interesting because of the amount of regulations they have to meet, amount of qualifications they have to meet in order to be called bottled in bond. So it has to be a product of one distillation season. And what I mean by that is either January to June or June to December, it was produced and made completely, right? It is a very restrictive thing. And that's just one. We're going to go into some more here to be qualified as bottled in bond. But no, it has to be at least one distillation season. It has to be produced by one distiller. So you cannot use multiple distillers to create this. It has to be just by one distiller and at one distillery. Right. So again, like I use Jack Daniels as a thing. If the master distiller at Jack Daniels produced a bottle in a certain season, you know, and bottled it, there's the next one too. It has to be bottled at 100 proof or 50% alcohol, right? Has to be. And then it has to be at least 4 years old. So we know it has to meet that straight qualification as well. So this is the thing about bottled in bond. Know that it's not necessarily going to be like, oh, this is the greatest whiskey ever because they did all this stuff. Just know that it had to meet a lot of qualifications in order to be called that. So it's kind of awesome and cool in the fact that, wow, you guys really went the extra mile to make sure that like you met these qualifications so that you could put that bottled in bond on your whiskey. And some whiskeys are great. I think Old Forester's does a bottled in bond and it's awesome. And I don't mind that one at all. But just know that that's what the qualifications are. Cask strength. Sometimes you'll see this terminology on there. Cask strength refers to it's bottled at the proof that it came out of the barrel at, right? So that what they did was open the barrel and pour the whiskey in the bottle. They didn't proof it down. They didn't do anything. They just kept it at cask strength. So whatever the proof was in the barrel, that's what the proof is in the bottle. No changes were made. Okay. Cask mates. The reason why I put this on here, it's not a common one that you're going to see this. Cask mates, I believe it may only be Jameson. I think Jameson might be the one that kind of coined this and has done it with their bottles. I don't know of anybody else who does this, but Jameson is really cool because what they did was they made their Jameson, right? They have the Jameson barrels and all that. They send those Jameson barrels to a brewery where they put their stout beer or IPA beer in. They have two different kinds, a Caskmates stout and a Caskmates IPA. So let's use stout as an example because it's my favorite of the two. It's really good. So they send the Jameson barrels over there. They make their stout beer in there. Once they're done with, you know, everything they need to do and they bottle the beer, then they send that barrel back to Jameson, who finishes their Jameson in that barrel. So now it has some of those stout characteristics inside of the Jameson. I note it as being very like creamy, which is really, it's a really cool thing to have like a creamy Jameson, you know. It's not overly so. It's not like you're getting a Guinness or something, but it does have some of those characteristics in there, which I think is awesome that they did that. It's just a really cool thing that they're doing. And I included it in this, not that you're going to see it a lot, but just because if you're interested in doing it, it's sold pretty much everywhere. Like you can find Jameson Caskmates IPA or Stout Edition anywhere. I think I saw it at like Target the other day. So you can find it wherever. And then next thing here, age statement. Age statement is really cool because a lot of times what you'll see is on a bottle, it'll say like 10 years or 12 years or 18 years or 21 years or whatever it is, right? And a lot of people associate quality with age. And that's kind of true, right? Not always. And I don't want to be quoted on saying that, but not always is that true. It's not like you're going to be like, oh, I love this 25-year-old random whiskey more than I like Laphroaig 10, right? You could absolutely like the Laphroaig 10 more. That means nothing. So, but just know that those are kind of the years. And that's what people typically associate with quality, whether it's right or not, you know? So let's say that you have a 12-year-old whiskey. You have a 12-year-old whatever, like we'll use Laphroaig. What that means is that the youngest barrel in that whiskey is 12 years old. It doesn't mean all of the whiskey that was put in there is 12 years old, which is really cool. You could have a 20-year-old whiskey inside of your Laphroaig 12. Okay, so just know that that is the case. 12 years, if it says 12 years on the bottle, it's the youngest barrel is 12 years. Not all of it necessarily is 12 years, which is cool because you'll know, hey, nothing in here is less than 12 years, but there could be stuff that's older than 12 years in this bottle. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about here is sourced whiskey. Okay, sourced whiskey typically people associate with poor quality. That is entirely untrue. It can be, right? But anything can be. Something that was made that wasn't sourced can be maybe not great quality. But sourced whiskey, you'll find that like half of the bourbon on the shelves today are sourced. And they're typically sourced from like MGP, right? Which is a mass distillery that is producing whiskey for tons of different brands. And it's located in Indiana. So what you'll see a lot of times on the bottle is either like made in Indiana, sourced in Indiana, sourced at MGP. Sometimes people just come out and say right where it was. But if they're using like made in Indiana or made in the heartland of America or something like that, that typically they're not trying to hide the fact that they're in MGP. They're just saying, hey, this is where we were distilled. And they're trying to give it a little bit more of a kick than just, hey, we were sourced from MGP, right? They're just putting a little bit of not so much trickery in there, but kind of, right? And then one other thing I want to mention with this, though, and the reason why sometimes sourced whiskey can be cool, Whistlepig did this. Whistlepig is actually a pretty common one that a lot of people know about. They now make their own, right? So they now have their own distillery. They're doing their own things. But Whistlepig used to source, and I don't know if they have different whiskeys that still they source. I'm not sure about that. But what they did was they sourced from Canada. So what they put on their bottle was something really cool, right? It was rescued from Canada and perfected in America. And that's just a cool way of saying that, hey, I sourced my whiskey, but you know, like they're just putting their own little spin on it. They weren't trying to hide it. They were saying, hey, we got this from Canada, right? But we finished it up in America and this is the product that you're getting. That's super cool. Sometimes you'll see that. The problem that I have with sourced whiskey, not all sourced whiskey. So I'm going to preface that by saying not all sourced whiskey, right? But sometimes people will try to hide the fact that they're sourced. That is what I kind of have the most problem with, because you're deliberately hiding. You're not saying like made in America or made in the heartland of America. I don't care about that. You're saying where it was made. You're not really trying to hide it. You're being honest about it. You're just kind of putting your own little spin on it, but that's fine. What I have a problem with is people that are like, oh, this is a 100-year-old recipe from my great, great grandfather who won it in a poker match and all, like, and then you come to find out it's a 2-year-old whiskey from MGP. It's like, you didn't cleverly, you know, put a quote in there or something like that and say, hey, we did rescue it from Canada and perfect it in America, whatever. You just straight up lied at that point, in my opinion. So, like, that's what I have an issue with when Source Whiskey does that. But if you're just sourcing a whiskey and you're honest about it, there, sourced whiskey can be absolutely amazing whiskey. So don't judge it by the fact that it was sourced, right? They actually sourced things a lot back in the day. So don't think that that's like a new thing that's, oh, we're sourcing whiskey, so this is blah, blah, blah. No, that was actually done a lot back in the day. That was kind of what the mainstream was, actually. So it was, sourced whiskey can be really awesome whiskey. So I want you to try it. And if you find something that was sourced from MGP or sourced from Canada or sourced from wherever, right, still get it and still try it and experience it and see if you like it. It's not that it's like, oh, this isn't whiskey. No, it's absolutely whiskey and it's made with the same standards and everything else. It's just sourced. That's it, right? So don't judge it by that alone. And you know what? Speaking of judging, I'm going to end the podcast with this. I want to get something very clear here. People's whiskey tastes are very different. Okay, so don't judge someone because they like a whiskey that you don't, or they, you know, don't like a whiskey that you love. That's silly, right? People are not going to always like what you like. In fact, I was just recently at a bar and I ordered a Lagavulin, right? And the guy next to me ordered a Jack and Coke. That's totally fine, right? We are on totally different spectrums, but it doesn't matter. The guy that ordered a Jack and Coke, that's just how he likes it. And typically in my experience, the reason why they order Jack and Coke is for one of two reasons, or maybe a combination of both, right? The first being it's really easy to drink and they just want to get drunk, right? The second being they like whiskey flavored things. So they kind of like whiskey, but they don't necessarily like it neat yet. They're not quite at that point where they feel comfortable enough or like it enough to order a neat whiskey. And actually, I like when I meet people like this because it starts off an awesome conversation that you can have about whiskey for introducing this guy to new things. You can just be like, hey, have you ever tried like a whiskey neat before? And they might be like, oh, you know, yeah, I hate it. Okay, that's fine. But if he's like, oh, you know, I like the idea of drinking whiskey neat, I just don't necessarily like the taste of it. And then you can be like, oh, what did you have? You know, and that's really how you can get into the conversation and even maybe recommend some of the whiskeys that you feel are good introductions for this guy, depending on his different kind of tastes and things. So that can be an awesome entry into it. And I have nothing at all against cocktails whatsoever, right? So if you are Jack and Coke or Old Fashioned or Manhattan or Sazerac or something like that, if I have no problem ordering that, I'll order that frequently, right? I don't always have to drink whiskey neat. It's just I like it sometimes, but I also sometimes just want a good old fashioned, right? It doesn't matter. So if someone's ordering something that you may not like or not don't approve with, just shut up, right? Like, who cares? Let them enjoy what they want to enjoy. That's my kind of end rant there. I don't mean to do that, but it's just something that, because we're going to do another episode on whiskey and talk about a lot more things, but I want to make that abundantly clear that that is my stance on this. If somebody enjoys something that you don't like, that's fine. And if you enjoy something that someone else doesn't like, that's fine. You don't have to try to be something you're not. Enjoy what you like and go from there. So this is just the beginning, guys, right? I have so much more to talk about with whiskey, and I'm going to absolutely be making a second part in this video. I don't know about a third part. I think I can probably condense it down enough, because I think the biggest thing here is just getting you started. With the knowledge that I'm going to give you, even if you don't pursue it any further than just having the knowledge, I still think it's good to know about. But also, if you're interested in getting into this, this is a great start for you, because you'll start to understand terminology and you start to understand a lot of these different things about whiskey so that you can feel the most confident in starting. And I'm going to give a lot more recommendations on whiskey. And again, these are my personal recommendations. They don't always hold true. But the whole point that I'm trying to get across is I want you to try different things. And I don't want you to try one whiskey, say, I hate this, and then never do anything with it again. Try a whole bunch of stuff and see what you like and go from there. Right. But I truly feel like just giving you the fundamental knowledge that you need and then letting you go off is the best possible way that we can teach you a subject. So I'm going to give you a ton of information about it, but then I want you to do your own thing, have experiences with whiskey. Tell me what you like and what you don't like, right? Like, let's have a conversation about this and go from there. Really, a constructive criticism conversation is going to be the best, right? So we can talk about all kinds of stuff. You can call me stupid for some of the recommendations I have. I'm not going to be hurt by it. That's fine. But my whole point is try different things, please, right? So all I'm asking, please subscribe, keep listening to this weekly podcast. I'm going to keep putting these out for as long as I possibly can. I'm going to do so many more episodes, and this isn't just whiskey, right? I'm going to talk about poker, cigars, fitness, suits, you know, firearms, woodworking, whatever I possibly can to give you the most amount of knowledge and teach you some skills that I truly believe that men should have. And that, you know, if you're interested in one of these things, that's awesome. So if you want to help support the show, you can always donate at anchor.fm/roughfellow. That will be incredibly helpful for us keeping the show going and continuing to provide this kind of service for you and this value for you. So I appreciate you today. I appreciate everything that you're doing. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you next time. This was Roughfellow.